League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Drive Time Show on Toledo Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Drill to right field, that ball is hit well, it's to the wall, and it is gone. Jamer Candelario has his first Tigers home run. He showed some pop in the minor leagues, and that's his first big league homer with the Tigers. Jamer gets one back.
This 106.5 The Ticket Sports Exclusive is driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Rowe does over the middle.
There you go.
Joe McQuinn, right side, to the house. Count it down with me, folks. 10-5, end zone, touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, that is big. How about 2-7, patrolling center field like a safety should.
Get ready. It's now drive time.
Barrett gets the snap, hands it to Weber. Weber sweeping left side of the Rutgers 45 to the 40, 35, 30, down the sideline. Weber to the 20, to the 10, to the 5, and into the end zone goes Mike Weber with a 46-yard touchdown run to increase Ohio State's lead by six more.
Here's the host of Drive Time.
Now Gretzky's got a breakaway. He's in all alone. He shoots and scores. Curry blocks the shot, and Gretzky ends 3-0. Los Angeles, Wayne Gretzky gets the goal.
Mike Miller is out there watching.
On its way, here's Chris DeMarco to win it. He wins it. DeMarco, 15 feet, 4 inches, center of the cup, President's Cup to the United States.
Well, good evening, everybody. How are you? Another edition of Drive Time, followed by Face-Off, the hockey show. Tonight's in the Loft Restaurant here in Savannah, Tam and Shanner. By the way, tonight is show 1,606. And today is February the 7th, 2018. Glad to have you on board, everybody. Doubleheader tonight. In about 5 minutes from now, we're going to listen to a little bit of the Matt Patricia press conference today up at Allen Park. Or was that at Ford Field, Jim, or Allen Park?
You know, good question. I don't know which one it was at. I'm thinking that it was at Allen Park.
No, me too. I can't confirm that. It was at Allen Park. I just was curious there. Anyways, Jim is good enough to grab some sound from that. We're gonna hear that in about 5 minutes from now. Again, Matt Patricia, the new head coach of the Detroit Lions. Of course, news out of Indianapolis. Josh McDaniels is not going to take that job. You know, the funny thing from what I heard, a little bit of it driving into to Tam o' Shanter today, is that Matt Patricia really did not comment one way or the other on the situation for Jim Bob Cooter, the offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions. He did say he's going to be on the staff, but he wouldn't commit and say definitively that he would be the offensive coordinator. Are they going to move him to quarterback coach or what? Whatever. But that's one thing I took out of the press conference today. Everything else was kind of glad to be in Detroit. Again, I mentioned this on Monday. Boy, a lot of yards given up by the Philadelphia Eagles, and I'm not going to judge a guy's career in one game, but they went up and down the field on that New England defense. But again, Matt Patricia, the new head coach of the Detroit Lions, sound for the press conference, the presser coming up in just a couple of moments. At about 5, we're going to switch things up here on a Wednesday. About 5:20 today, we're going to be talking to Matt Markey. He is the outdoor editor of the Toledo Blade. The reason we push Matt up here is I wanted to get Rod Beard on, Detroit News, Detroit Pistons writer. He is up at Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. The Pistons red hot. They've won 4 straight. They are 3-0 with Blake Griffin. They have Brooklyn the Nets tonight at Little Caesars Arena. And Rod Beard normally meets all the press, meets Stan Van Gundy around 5:15. So Rod will be available about 5:40, hence the switch in our lineup tonight. Then at 6:05 tonight or 6:15, we'll be talking to Jim McCabe, one of the newest members of the Toledo Hockey Hall of Fame. That's on Face Off the Hockey Show, our 18th year. And at 6:35 tonight, still working on a couple of things. Aaron Portsline, you know this great online sports page, The Athletic. Aaron Portsline left the Columbus Dispatch. He's their NHL writer. He is now writing for The Athletic. Get an NHL update. Red Wings lose a tough one last night to Boston. And again, a dwindling percentage points they're going to get into postseason play with the NHL trade deadline, of course, coming up towards the end of the month. All right, everybody, let's take a break. Right around the corner, we'll hear from Detroit Lions' new head coach, Matt Patricia. This is Drive Time. It's driven by the low-payment king, Ralph Mahalik, Superstore 52, right after the Super Bowl 52, Monroe Superstore in business for 52 years. A lot of great deals up there. Visit MonroeSuperstore.com. Visit the Superstore on Facebook as well. Tremendous, tremendous deals. Look for their ads almost daily in the Toledo Blade. One of my favorites, 2018 Dodge Journey GT, $148 a month. That is a 24-month lease. New Lions head coach Matt Patricia right around the corner.
Local sports. It's Drive Time on Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Loft Restaurant. Drive Time driven by the low-payment king, Ralph Mahalik. You're tuned to The Ticket, by the way, Toledo's sports leader, home of the Detroit Lions, and as the home of the Lions, here's a little cut from the press conference today. New head coach Matt Patricia of the Detroit Lions.
This position carries great responsibility, and I take that responsibility very seriously. I'm going to do everything I can to lead this organization in the right way. My goal is to help this organization, this fan base, and this city to make it proud. I will work tirelessly to build a team that everyone around here can be proud of, both on and off the field. Truly excited for the Lion fan base. Had the opportunity to play here a couple times and very excited to have that on my side this time. I believe that I am a leader. I believe that I'm a problem solver. I want to represent the toughness of this city. We will be organized. We will be detailed. We will teach and develop our players and our coaches. We will be passionate. We will love and respect the game, and we will be committed to winning. We will be competitive in all that we do. We will have a blue-collar mentality. We will work hard as a team to make this city proud. You know, I think it's hard to really kind of categorize a way. I think in general, Bob and I have a lot of experience and history together, and we believe in a lot of the same things as far as when you look at and evaluate players, how a team should be run, how it should be coached. So there's a great background that we both share, and obviously a common ground that we both understand is how, you know, we both envision a team being run. So that's what makes it, you know, such a great match for Bob and I to be in this situation, that we can work together and try to put a team in place that we feel represents what we believe in and what we want the Detroit Lions to look like. And hopefully, you know, that product will show up on the field. And I think after, you know, hopefully you have some success at that point, that's when maybe you start calling it the Lions way. But we got a long way to go before we have any particular way in which we'll call our own. And scheme and things like that is going to be a process for us to go through before we kind of nail everything down. There's a whole player evaluation that needs to take place first. There's obviously free agency, the draft, which affects all of that too. And then as you go through the process of spring, training camp, and the season, for me, you know, that changes. You know, scheme is something that's not necessarily locked into exactly have to be this. You know, you want to kind of make sure you tailor what you do to the players that you have so that they can perform at a high level out in the field.
Well, that was Matt Patricia, new head coach of the Detroit Lions. I mean, really, to me, that's just, you know, nothing but coach speak there. It's a typical, you know, press conference when a new coach is named. Want to make Detroit proud, want to do the right things, we're going to prepare. You know, track record is there. Relationship is everything with general manager Bob Quinn. And listen, I've said this time and time and again on this show. This is, it's like a, like an old boys club thing in this coaching fraternity, whether it's assistants or head coaches. The general managers want to feel comfortable with guys that they've worked with before. And obviously Quinn working with Patricia before, and that's where the relationship, you know, I mean, I did hear a little bit on this today. You know, Josh McDaniels, this is an interesting scenario now, turning down that job in Indianapolis. Do you think Bob Quinn maybe, just maybe, reached out to Josh McDaniels first before he reached out to Matt Patricia? from what I'm reading and hearing, that was not the case. But did Bob Quinn get his second choice, because he reached out to Josh McDaniels first, who, of course, was going to be employed by Indianapolis. And I guess there's a big snafu now between McDaniels and his agent and all sorts of stuff that went on for Indianapolis now in a real, real tough spot. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, it's been reported for 3 weeks. That's where he's going. He is going to stay in New England. I talked about on Monday. I mean, is Gronk going to retire? Brady's 41. You know, Belichick, what's going on with him? How long is he going to be around? And I did say they're losing their defensive and their offensive coordinator. Well, their offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, is back with New England. So, just a weird scenario there with this Indianapolis Colts situation as well. All right, this is Drive Time. Out of order a little bit, but never out of line. Right around the corner, Matt Markey, Toledo Blade Outdoor Editor. We will be back with that after this. This is Drive Time, coming to you from the Loft Restaurant here at Sylvania Tam-O-Shanter.
PN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's your host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Drive Time. On board, Matt Markey joins us now. He is the Toledo Blade Outdoor Editor and a big contributor to this show. We've been on the air 6 years, so I'm guessing Matt's been with me now for six. We certainly appreciate that, and we appreciate the great folks at Jan's Netcraft Fishing Tackle. Fishing's their passion. By the way, expert advice is always free. Visit Netcraft on Briarfield Boulevard in Maumee for everything you need to fish for bass, walleye, and anything else that swims. Great folks. I've said this a number of times. I remember when they were back on Tremainsville Road, meter age and myself are aging the efficiency and the age of that great group of folks. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Mike, I'm doing fine. How are you this evening?
Very good. I hate to start our little get-together like this, but I was really saddened to read the obituary here of Dave Wolford, who I didn't know real well, but I grew up following hockey in this town. I've been fortunate now to be with, well, between the Toledo Gold Diggers and the Kalamazoo Wings and the New Jersey Devils and now the Windsor Spitfires, four very good organizations. And I think my interest was piqued reading about the Blades in the Toledo Blade when Dave was covering that team. And I talked to Dave not long ago when Dino Moscato passed away, a real fan favorite here in the 60s and the 70s. I was saddened to read it. And I called on Dave numerous times over the last 3 or 4 years because he was such an expert on motorsports. And we did this show, Drive Time, for both races up at MIS, and I always would run into Dave. I knew nothing of his illness. He always had that big smile on his face, and I think Dave Hackenberg said it well when he said, when you walked into the newsroom at night and Dave was sitting there, you knew it'd be a good night, and I'm sure you'd run into Dave over the years yourself.
Yeah, I knew Dave for, probably 30 years and worked with him for many of those years. Just one of the, you know, not to oversimplify it, just one of the classic good guys that you run into in your career. And besides being, you know, a heck of a nice fellow, he was also extremely good at what he did. And he covered, you know, the Big Ten, and he covered the MAC for a while and all, and he certainly covered hockey. But when it came to motorsports, that was, I think, his strongest suit and someplace where he was really invested in the beat, and got to know the people and the personalities over the years, and built himself a reputation among motorsports writers that, you know, was probably second to none in the Midwest. And I followed him on that beat and got to meet a lot of those same people, and they, you know, I never heard a bad word about the guy. And that's, you know, that's something to your credit if you can write about a sport for, you know, 20, 25 years and not have a single person out there with a vendetta. That's something to be said, but just an exceptional human being, a great you know, resident of Devil's Lake in the summers, and somebody who certainly loved that lake and loved fishing the Irish Hills and loved MIS, and he's going to be missed by a lot of us.
No, no question about it. We lose him too young at 78. Like I said, became a contributor to this show for the last 4 or 5 years. Every time I was up at MIS, he'd be standing there in the same spot, and well, you couldn't stand there for 5 minutes without, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 people walking by. Hi, Dave. How are you? Hey, Dave. Yeah, he will be missed. Great to have you on as always, Matt, and you talked about it last week a little bit on this Tie Pro. I thought this story was absolutely intriguing, but I thought your best line, he says, everybody else is fishing but me, and we've talked about scenarios like this before where you invent something, get involved in something just because your mind works that way, and lo and behold, it goes from doing this stuff at the kitchen table to taking up 20 hours a day. A great product, especially for the older guys like me as well, whose eyesight is going, having a tough time following the puck a lot more than I did when I was 30 years old. I can tell you that. I wish something would come. Now, they probably have surgery for that, but hats off to this guy. And, again, Tam Van De Waal, and, again, the product is Tie Pro. I know you use one as well.
Indeed, and I saw the product and gave it a test and all before I got in touch with him, because I get approached, you know, several dozen times a year by people who have the newest, latest, greatest fishing lure or fishing product or anything like that. And I'm a little skeptical at first, but the thing that intrigued me about Tom's product is that he wasn't pushing it aggressively. He kind of let the product, you know, sell itself. He wasn't going to give you a long sales pitch. It was, here it is, take a look, tell me what you think. And that's kind of true, I think, engineer fashion. I mean, the guy was basically a product engineer for Abbott Pharmaceuticals for his career. Had a lot of know-how on how to work with plastic. Did a lot of things in terms of the packaging and the safety involved in some of their pharmaceutical products. And so when he retires, this just seemed like a somewhat logical step. Was fishing was one of his primary interests. This was an area where it was becoming a little more challenging for him, just trying to see that fishing line and get it through that tiny little eyelet. And he, instead of, you know, complaining about it incessantly, he went to the workbench and fiddled and tinkered and came up with something that I think is a simple little stroke of genius. And it works exceptionally well at a very simple task. But like you said, if somebody has, you know, some vision issues, and where I found that it also helps, Mike, is if you're out in a boat and there's a little bit of, you know, wave action going on and things are rocking, that can be a tough, you know, way to thread a line through an eyelet as well. But this tool certainly helps in that situation. So, you know, simple, practical, but, you know, behind it, that little bit of, you know, American ingenuity and entrepreneurship and a little stroke of genius. So, I'm a big fan of it because the product sells itself.
No, no question about it. And for our listeners, it almost looks like a clothespin with a funnel in there that you, you know, attach to your hook, and basically you can thread your fishing line through there. And I mean, it makes, I think you said it last week, it's such a simple idea, but the way those guys think, they can envision that, put it into a blueprint in their head, probably experiment a little bit here and there, and here you go. Tie Pro is on the market, and I love the photograph of Tom sitting there at his workbench and, you know, just putting some together, but simple but efficient. I think that's just a, you know, a tremendous, tremendous, you know, idea, but that pops into a guy like Tom's mind. I mean, I would sit there and think there's got to be a better way, but putting that on paper and putting it into manufacturing, that's a whole other story.
It is, and that's where, you know, people with that creative or that engineer's mind, that's where they kind of take over. And I've looked at a lot of things and said there's got to be a better way. I just can't come up with what the better way is, and then when someone does, they, you know, they have my respect, and that's what's happened here. It's just something that is going to be a benefit to me and to literally, you know, thousands of people that are out there fishing that maybe are struggling with their vision a little bit, or sometimes in the evening in the low light conditions on a trout stream, trying to get that line through that tiny little eye on the fly. I mean, this is something that's going to really help out a lot of people. And, it's, you know, I love the fact that it's an Ohio guy. I love the fact that everything is made in the USA, everything, you know, right here in Ohio. And that he just sat down and sketched it out and started fiddling and tinkering, and it was, you know, less than a year's time. He had a product. It's on the market, and he's, you know, people are buying him by the thousands. And so it's a great, you know, American entrepreneur story.
No doubt about it. Again, talking to Matt Markey here on Drive Time. His appearance is always brought to you by Jan's Netcraft Fishing Tackle over on Briarfield Boulevard. Also, you could visit jansnetcraft.com. I'm going to go to Canada tomorrow to broadcast a hockey game, and I'm going to, and I know it's just the name Canada Geese, but I'm going to give somebody a little baloney tomorrow, one of my sport writer friends up there, and talk about the story you wrote about the Canadian geese coming down here and depositing, you know, some of their, well, humanly, bad choice of words there, some of nature's products all over the place in northwest Ohio and southeast Michigan, and that's the Canada geese and the problems that they, number one, present, and they're hard to solve, and a lot of people go through it, and you wrote a story on it.
Yeah, just to try to give people some ideas on how to deal with it, because early in the spring, if you get on top of the issue, then you can really minimize your issues. And this is something, you know, to Canada's misfortune, that just happens to be the name, and we can't really blame them for these geese, but that's the name they have, so that's the one we go with. But these, you know, large waterfowl are very good at, you know, becoming acclimated around our farm ponds, and they're a big problem on a lot of the lakes there in the Irish Hills. They're a problem in parks where they foul picnic areas and areas where kids are supposed to play. Maumee Bay State Park, the beach and the area out there has had a lot of trouble with them as well. It's just they come in numbers. They're extremely aggressive when there's a nest nearby, and a, you know, one of these 15 or 18 pound birds is not hesitant at all about going after a 250 pound man with everything they have. I mean, they're extremely aggressive, you know, at certain times, and you know, they're, when they leave their business cards everywhere, it can foul a golf course green, it can foul a you know, a pond at a condominium complex. There's a lot of problems associated with that, so it's best if we get the deterrents working very early before they nest, so they decide to go somewhere in a more rural area and find a quiet section of a stream or a creek or someplace to do their nesting. And it doesn't take place, you know, in our parks or on our public beaches, and certainly not, you know, in some of these retention ponds around apartments and condos and all. Those aren't good places for them because there are sidewalks, there's people walking by, and they follow the sidewalk, and also that, you know, hazard that's involved when they decide to nest. They take on a whole different aggressive posture. So people need to just look at the deterrents that are out there, and also the key is to get on it early before they nest.
Well, I guess the other thing in your story, I mean, all the way back to Matt, 1918, these were almost extinct, and all of a sudden a couple of programs got it going in the right direction. I know the meeting was Monday down in Columbus. Number one, anything come out of the meeting? And number two, all of a sudden we go from an endangered species to, I don't want to say overrun with the Canada geese, the Canadian geese, but there's certainly, I see them everywhere.
Yeah, they it's one of the most remarkable recovery stories in wildlife management. Now, some people would say that, you know, they've recovered a little too well and have become a curse, but I think their curse is the fact that they're so good at, you know, becoming acclimated around people. You know, they decided that life in the marsh maybe wasn't the best, and life around the pond here at, you know, hole number five was a lot better because I had plenty of grass right by, nearby, and it's very rich grass because of the fertilizer, you know, plenty to eat, and a nice water safe place here with good vision all around so I could look for predators. You know, a lot of these geese moved into a place like that and just decided, you know, that maybe the marsh, you know, out at McGee or Ottawa National Wildlife Refuge, life was better, you know, in one of these park ponds or along a golf course or something. So they, you know, they adapted and acclimated themselves to these places. And what came out of the meeting essentially is, you know, to get this whole suite of deterrents. Use, you know, as many things as you can, because you can't trap them and you can't physically harm them, but you can use a lot of different methods to scare them or shoo them away. And my favorite part of it is that the single best deterrent that they found is a border collie. And I'm a border collie guy, and we have been for a long time, and it's a great dog, and they do an exceptional job of running up and chasing the geese away. They don't catch them, they don't hurt them, but they deter them. So if the geese get chased away often enough, they'll just find someplace better. And that's the whole idea of deterrence, is to convince them to go somewhere else.
No, and I'm with you. Of course, I've talked to you before about our border collie, Jake. Not to get off subject and regress here, I had to laugh. My wife went to a fundraiser last night, and she ended up winning a jackpot. I mean, obviously, she come home, and she was absolutely elated last night. And Jake, our rescue border collie, that I think had a pretty tough upbringing. We got him about back to normal now. But I got to tell you, my wife Sue came to the door last night and fired a big wad of bills at me and said, I won. And, you know, after I gave it back to her and said, hey, congratulations. Jake, the border collie, thought she was coming towards me a little aggressively there, just kind of circled and started, you know, you better watch it. The master of the family, he moved at him pretty aggressively. Now, he wasn't aggressive, but they just think like that they want things in a certain place, and they will go in a certain direction, either to herd or prod things in a normal. It was really kind of funny to watch.
Yeah, their instincts are absolutely amazing. I mean, our Libby, you know, border collie we had for 15 years, just never had any training. We got her as a young pup, so certainly her mother wasn't able to train her or whatever, but her instincts were absolutely amazing in terms of how to herd and how to keep the kids away from the pond when they were little. And just, I was in awe of that, you know, every time I saw it in play. So I'm not surprised at all that your border collie has the same kind of instincts. It's just a really amazing animal.
No, they really, really are. And again, without getting off subject here, when we got Jake, we were told, nope, don't take this one home. And he was a project, but after about 7 years now, got him going in the right direction. He's a real treat. Hey, the other group you wrote about, We Are Outdoors, tell me about it. I read the story, and again, you know, whether it's birders, anglers, hikers, hunters, as you mentioned in the story, what exactly is their mission, Matt?
Well, their mission is to focus on education, because these are the core group here are veterans of decades of habitat work, mostly with Pheasants Forever. But people who, you know, have dirt under their fingernails and have blisters on their hands, they've done the work. But along the way, as has been the case with so many of these people I've met, Mike, some of the charter captains and so on, they become so educated in these various specialty areas that, you know, they want to share that. And as the charter captains have become experts on algal blooms, you know, these folks have become experts on the care and propagation of habitat and a number of other things involved in, you know, how we care for the soil, things we do to protect our water. So their mission is going to be really focused on sharing the education. And this isn't something that they've picked up from reading a pamphlet or something like that. They've gone to Wisconsin, to the Leopold Foundation, and got really intense training, background, and information on the ways that, you know, we need to conduct ourselves to really be long-term, you know, stewards of the land and the water, the air, and the wildlife around us. And it's a really dedicated group, people I've known for many, many years, and they're going to take, you know, what they have and share it with as many groups as they can, as many ages. And it doesn't matter if it's a seniors group or a bunch of Cub Scouts or an eighth grade, you know, field biology class. It doesn't matter. They're going to share it with everyone and, you know, try to get that fire, you know, for that stewardship and caring about, you know, how we're all interconnected. What happens to the land and what happens to the air and the water is also going to affect me and my family and, you know, my children's children. So we need to take better care of those things. So that's their mission. It's primarily, you know, an education vehicle to get that lesson across.
Good stuff, Matt. Hard break. Got to go. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk next Wednesday. Appreciate your contribution. Great hearing your voice.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Matt Markey, Toledo Blade, outdoor editor, back with Rod Beard. Preview Pistons Brooklyn tonight from Little Caesars Arena. This is Drive Time, driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik.
More of the best in local sports talk. It's Drive Time on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Drive. that time. Little technical snafu there. Talked to Matt Markey tonight. We had Matt Patricia's press conference joining us now from Little Caesars Arena. A Detroit news writer, beat writer for the Detroit Pistons, longtime contributor to this show, Rod Beard, joins us. Hello, Rod. How are you?
Hey, Mike. How are you? How's it going?
Very good. First things first, four in a row, three consecutive wins with Blake Griffin in town, and in town tonight, the Nets. What did Mr. Van Gundy have to say today?
Well, I think he's still installing stuff and trying to figure out what's the best way to use Griffin, and they've done it on the fly. He's talented enough and versatile enough where they can get a lot of stuff done, and they can run plays, but they still haven't figured out exactly what they want to do, all of the specific plays and the specific actions, and that's still a work in progress. They've only had a couple of practices and a couple of shoot-arounds to try to get some of that stuff installed.
I read your story today, too. Holy smokes, $1.1 billion, an increase of 22% in 1 year. The worth of the Pistons rising. People have said this for a long time. You want a good investment that surpasses the stock market. If you get enough money, buy a professional sports team that has a new building. That's certainly worked in the favor of the Pistons.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like Bitcoin when you look at what Tom Gores paid for the team, $325 million just 6 years ago, and he's able to parlay that into $1.1 billion of valuation. And again, he's still got the asset of the Palace building. That's worth probably another $350. I mean, that's what kind of ridiculous numbers that we're talking about. But again, if you're looking to make money, as you said, buy an NBA team because the TV contracts and everything else make that very, very lucrative.
No. And I mean, I got to ask you something here, Tom, and I should, Rod, about Tom. I should know this. You had the name of his company in your article today on Forbes article that, of course, you referred to as well when they went through the rankings. Reading your story, you talked about the business that Tom Gores is in. Explain it to me. How did he make his money?
Well, it's a mergers and acquisitions M&A company that really literally takes a business, buys it, and figures out ways to turn it around, make it more profitable, and then sell it for that profit. And, I mean, this is no better example of that. Not saying that he's looking to sell the Pistons at all, but he took something that was of low value that he paid a very low amount for comparative to some of the other teams in the league, and he's made it into a profitable venture by spinning off and getting the Palace Sports and Entertainment. He's still got all of those concert venues in addition to the building itself, and the team itself is now worth $1.1 billion, and they may not be profitable operational basis when you look at the numbers themselves. But still, when you look at if he sold the team today, what would it be worth? That $1.1 billion is a good starting point to figure that out.
Oh, unbelievable. Hey, I liked your story as well on Reggie Hearn. And, you know, you mentioned chemistry, and I spent a lot of time in locker rooms. I never think that is underrated. And I've said this a million times on this show, the Stanley Cup teams I was around and did the broadcasting for, other championship teams, Memorial Cups in Canada, even going back to Turner Cups here in Toledo. The one common thread was guys in that locker room that didn't want to lose for your teammates and got along, took care of each other. And you know what? We knew that Blake Griffin was a good basketball player, one of the top 20 maybe in the NBA. But I like what he's doing here as well for the chemistry of the team and doing the right thing and trying to fit in right away. I don't know if I saw that coming. I mean, when I first heard about the trade and read your story, I'm going, boy, is this guy going to like this in Detroit? How is this going to work out? I mean, it's a short sample, but so far, so good.
Oh, absolutely. So far, so good. And again, this is Reggie Hearn, who's a two-way contract guy, but if you will, the last guy, the 15th guy on the bench that doesn't get a lot of playing time, may not even get introduced to Blake Griffin very often. But you could see in the video after the game, if you watch the broadcast, that Griffin very clearly went up and asked him, hey, was that your first shot? And then went and sought out the ball to find the reps to make sure that he got the game ball, that he was able to use that as a or keep that as a memento from his first NBA shot that he made, a corner three-pointer. But, I mean, for you to be the superstar guy, the new guy, you've got 100 things going through your head after a game and trying to figure out what you want to do. He probably doesn't even have a steady place to live or know a lot about the Detroit area just yet. But for him to have that level of concern about the 15th guy on the bench and making sure that he had that moment. And I thought the best part about that story was that Blake said he didn't have his own first game ball and he wanted to make sure somebody else had theirs. And that's what a leader does. That's what a guy that makes you want to follow them. you look at a guy like that and just say, yeah, I'll do whatever this guy needs because he cares about my well-being and what happens.
No.
And that's the kicker to that story. It's a great, great story.
No, it is. I love it. I love those type of things. To me, that's what it's all about. Hey, short on time. Thanks for being patient. Rod, final question here. A little bit about the matchup tonight against Brooklyn. If the Pistons, who now have fallen a half game behind that number eight slot, if they're going to get a win tonight at home, how will they do it? What do they got to do right?
Well, I think they just have to play good, steady defense. And the Brooklyn game a couple weeks ago was the one that you kind of shook your head at and said, hey, something really might be wrong here, that they're really going down the tubes in this eight-game losing streak. But now this is the opportunity to get this to a five-game win streak, and they're playing some of their best ball, and Blake Griffin is a big part of that. I think if they just don't turn the ball over 20 times and play some good fundamental ball, then they'll be good tonight.
Good stuff, Rod. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, Mike. Appreciate it.
Rod Baird coming live from Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. Brooklyn Nets in town tonight to take on the red-hot Detroit Pistons. Back to close it out after this. This is Drive Time, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, coming to you from the Loft Restaurant here at Sylvania Tam-O-Shanter.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.